Oh, what I'd give for that wonderful phrase, to hear those three little words. That's all I'd live for the rest of my days. And what I feel in my heart, they say sincerely. No other words can tell it half so clearly. Three little words, eight little letters that simply mean I love.
Patricia T. O'Connor is here. She's the author of a number of books on the English language and a regular contributor to our show here at WNYC. She also has a blog, grammophobia.com, and she takes your questions when she's not here at mailbox@grammophobia.com. Have I covered everything?
I think so, yeah.
And last time you were here, this is kind of a follow-up to our last conversation.
Right.
We talked about...
I was swamped with mail after that. Interesting mail.
Well, we talked about how Elizabethan English might have actually been spoken, and it turns out to be a lot more like American English than contemporary British English. And so this grew out of that?
Yes, I got a lot of mail, and two people within a couple of days asked the same question, which I thought might be interesting to follow up on, and that is, why British pop stars, at least to them, sound as if they have American accents when they sing? Well, this is something that had, you know, crossed my mind a few times over the years, too, and so I thought maybe some other listeners might like to know about this. But it seems that unless a singer is deliberately trying to maintain his regional accent, wherever he's from, all pop music singers sound American when they sing in English.
Well, do you think that it's that they're singing in English or that they're singing songs that are kind of like based on the Great American Songbook? For example, Herman's Hermits, when they sang songs out of the British music hall tradition, sounded British, but when they sang regular pop songs,
right,
they,
and
they sounded
I want
American.
To mention Herman's Hermits later, but the point about all this is not that they're trying to sound American or that it has anything to do with the songs they're singing. Researchers think that there's the demands of music, the physiological demands of singing, the pressure through your pharynx, all these things, the pressure it takes to sing, the position of the mouth and tongue when you sing as opposed to when you speak, all these flatten out a regional accent. And it so happens that that flattened out accent that is the easiest to sing happens to sound American. You can call it American if you want, but that's why they all sound more or less the way we do. Now, American singers do this also to a certain extent. When American singers perform, to some extent, their R's become less R-y, if you know what I mean. They're more likely to say lova than lover. They're more likely to say ah than I. So they make compromises, too, from the demands of singing.
So they lose their regional accents.
They lose regional accents unless they're trying to maintain them. And the overall impression is that everyone sounds alike while singing. Now, the Swedish group ABBA is a good example. The members speak English with Swedish accents, but when they sing, their accents disappear and they sound like Americans.
That's all I, even when she spoke, that's all I ask of you, honey.
Right. But the same is true of the classic British rock singers. Now, while the Beatles did give certain words a little Liverpool twang, you can hear it sometimes, especially in the Abbey Road album. The overall impression is that we're listening to an American singing group. And you can't tell from their singing voices that Mick Jagger or Elton John or Rod Stewart all grew up in or near London. Now, I think we have clips of each of them. Elton John singing Island Girl. those R sounds. You can hear him pronouncing his R's, as he probably does not in speech. Well, we know he doesn't in speech. And we also have, I don't know if we have time for them.
Well, let's hear a little Rod Stewart.
Okay. Again,
he said, my heart.
Well, he said, my heart, and he said, forever. He didn't say forever. So that's another example. And maybe we'll get to Mick after that.
Well, we can get to it in just a moment. Okay. By the way, we want to invite calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate here with Patricia T. O'Connor. She visits us once a month to talk about the English language. And today we're actually talking about singing the English language. We'll be taking calls in just a few moments. But, you know, why not? I love this idea of doing DJ. Let's have a little Mick Jagger, who has a very heavy British accent normally when he speaks.
Oh, normally, yes. He's from London.
You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want.
Now, could he have sung "You Can't Always Get What
You
Want"?
Well, no, it would not have sounded right. And I'm sure that he wasn't deliberately saying "can't" instead of "can't." It's just it's easier to sing the words as he sang them.
I thought he was just being philosophical, referring to Immanuel Kant. But what do I know?
Well, that he studied at the London School of Economics.
Yes.
Right, he probably read some Kant.
Now, more recently, we have Adele, who... is shocking when you hear her in interviews because she sounds so American on her records.
Yes, she really does.
I thought it was hilarious.
Hilarious?
I thought it was funny. I wanted to be a singer forever, but it's not really my cup of tea. Having the whole world know who you are.
And then let's hear her sing a cup of tea.
Yeah. Right. She does not sound like in London and later Brighton and then London again.
So the answer is to sing English and then she could sound like an American.
Right.
A listener, Jim from White Plains, suggests Frank Sinatra is an example. He sang in perfect English, but when he spoke, he always sounded like a guy from Hoboken.
Yeah, that's a good example. I mean, this doesn't just work for foreigners. Somebody from the Bronx could sing opera and sound exactly like an Italian, too.
In fact, the Met in the recent Wagner Ring cycle, Siegfried was played by a man from Texas who came on our show and had a very heavy Texas accent.
Really?
But when you hear him singing Siegfried, his German sounds like the purest Wagnerian German you could ever imagine.
Right, and it's because he's singing. Now, if he were speaking German, I'm sure he would sound like someone from Texas speaking German. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't work out that way when he sings.
So the music, the notes actually determine it?
Well, I'll tell you what I've been able to find out is that when people sing, their regional accents are obliterated by three things, basically: physiology, phonetics, and the demands of the music itself. In effect, their accents are neutralized. And if they sound American, that's because the general American accent is fairly neutral. Now, we notice people's accents more easily when they speak at a normal speed. But singing isn't done at a normal speed. It's slowed down. And it's also more powerful than speech because the air pressure used to make the sounds is much greater when we sing. And the air passages open up and become larger. The mouth is more open. So the sound quality is very, very different. The one thing that happens is that the syllables are longer because a syllable per note, of course. Vowels get stretched out. The stresses, the normal accents fall differently than they do in speech. And the music basically takes over. The melody cancels out speech intonations. Someone with a high, squeaky voice isn't going to sound high and squeaky because he or she will be singing particular notes. So melody cancels out your normal speech intonations. The beat of the music cancels out your rhythms. And singers have to accent syllables as they're accented in the music. So if you accent your syllables in a weird way as you speak, that's not going to show up when you sing.
Now, a listener has written in to disagree, says, ABBA sang English on purpose to get more sales in the United States. Mick Jagger, Elton John, the Beatles all spoke of imitating Americans when learning songs, and that carried over into their songs. Ray Davis of the Kinks also kept his British accent, as does Richard Thompson.
Right. The Kinks, who are, by the way, maybe my favorite rock group of all time, they deliberately kept their Merseyside accents. And as the linguist David Crystal has written, that there are many singing groups in the U.S., in the U.K. today, who are deliberately avoiding the neutralization of their accent when they sing. They are deliberately inserting regional accents into their singing. And he says, in hardly any case do singers use a consistent regional accent throughout the whole song. So he says it can be done.
Country
singers deliberately sound Southern. Reggae singers deliberately sound Caribbean. Hip-hop singers may deliberately sound African-American. So you can maintain those accents when you sing. But the general default accent of anyone singing is...
As we saw with Motown, so with Ray Charles and pretty much most of the great African-Americans, Aretha Franklin, all the great soul singers.
Right. But I would like to say that I'm not just speaking off the top of my head. There are some arguments that rock groups, especially the UK, have imitated Americans. In fact... You mentioned Herman's Hermits before. They deliberately imitated Peter Noone, the Herman's Hermits lead singer, was from Manchester. When they recorded two of their songs, I'm Henry the Eighth, I Am, and Mrs. Brown, You've Got a Lovely Daughter, Noone deliberately tried to sound as Manchester as he could, because those two songs were aimed at the U.S. market, where there was the British invasion had taken over. And in fact, those two singles weren't even released in the U.K. But I think we have clips from those.
Yeah,
and
but
you can
I think
hear
we're
gonna, how they.
I want to take a call, and maybe we'll come back with
okay,
them. Okay,
good.
Well, we'll go out with one and come back with the
other.
Okay. But we have a lot of listeners who want to join in the conversation, including Philip from Chester, New Jersey. Hi, Philip. You're on the air.
Oh, awesome. Thanks. I'm a great fan of the show. I listen to every day. So what it is...
So you're that listener. Okay.
Yeah, every day. I'm right there with you. So I went to school for music. I took classical singing and lessons and all that good stuff for many, many years. And, you know, the voice, it's just a muscle. If you can manipulate it, just like you can manipulate your fingers, you can get it to do just about anything in any case, and that applies to everyone. So someone, like you said, someone from Texas can sound German if they're singing the way a German person would sing any sort of song. Same thing applies to singing in Italian or French and vice versa in any which way.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what you've been saying, Pat.
Well, the point that I wanted to make, though, is that when one sings English, the most neutral singing voice is the easiest to sing with. And it just so happens that the American accent is also very neutral.
I wonder how that works in other languages. When the French sing French, does it matter whether you come from Provence or Brittany or whatever, whether everybody sounds like they're from Paris?
Yeah, I don't know. That would be interesting to know.
Let's take another call. Chris, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. I just wanted to mention that group, Green Day. Whenever you listen to them, they sound like they're from Europe or something. Because I don't know, they do it deliberately because they sing sort of punk rock. So they have that sort of North American song. If you listen to the way they if you don't know, you would swear they're not from America or something. If somebody could correct me if I'm wrong. I just wanted to mention that one, Green Day. Mm-hmm.
So, but Pat, you've also said if you make a conscious attempt,
yes, it can be
then
done.
You can
sure.
sound
right.
whatever you want.
Like the British Music Hall sound, mm. comic sound.
Jim from New Jersey, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. This has nothing to do with that, but it was something I've been meaning to talk to the lady guru about. It's of course she knows that in Spain, every place but in Catalonia, they use a Castilian lisp, and the Catalonians they have a thinly disguised contempt for the speakers that use that, including tourists. Now, I have no dog in that fight. I'm Irish, but I do hear Irish news broadcasts occasionally, and once in a while they're talking about that river that flows through London, and the Irish pronounce it Thames. Now, if they had the same attitude that the Catalonians had, considering they're supposed to have such contempt for the English, they would be pronouncing it Thames. And every time I hear an Irishman, another Mick, saying Thames, it seems to me it's a kind of metaphysical tug at the forelock.
But don't people actually just the name of the river is the Thames, and yes, if you say Thames, nobody knows what you're talking about.
The spelling is irrelevant. The proper pronunciation of a name, in effect, has nothing to do with the way it's spelled. We don't say handkerchief. Or we don't say off 10, or some people do. But the spelling is irrelevant. It's always been pronounced Thames.
And there are many other places that have, you just have to learn how to pronounce the
name. Right, that's not a British affectation. That's the name of the river.
We'll take a little break, and when we come back, maybe we'll listen to a little of Peter Noon and Herman's Hermits. My guest is Patricia T. O'Connor. We're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also write into our show page at WNYC.org. Back with Patricia T. O'Connor, author of Woe Is I, You Send Me, Words Fail Me, Origins of the Specious, Woe Is I, Jr., and I'm assuming another book is in
Gone with the Wind.
You wrote Gone with the Wind?
Yeah.
Moby Dick, I heard.
I'm younger than I look.
Well, since we've been circling around Herman's Hermits and Peter Noon, should we listen to a couple of things from them?
Yes, these were both songs recorded in 1965 for an American audience.
I'm Henry the Eighth, I am. Henry the Eighth, I am. I got married to the widow next door. She's been married 7 times before, and everyone was an Henry.
Henry.
She wouldn't have a Willie or a Sam.
No, sir.
I'm her eighth old man, I'm Henry. Henry the Eighth, I am.
Mrs. Brown, you've got a lovely daughter. Girls as sharp as her are something rare.
Well, obviously, both with British accents, but
right.
Peter Noon also recorded songs
with
American accents.
Sure.
This Door Swings Both Ways.
All their other music was recorded with a neutral accent. And these singles were released in the U.S., but not in the U.K.
But why not in the U.K.? Because they are in the tradition of songs that are favorites in pubs, like My Old Man Said Follow the Van. I don't know if you know that one.
No, that's a new one on me.
That's an old one on the British. But don't dilly-dally on the way.
Well, see, at the time, the U.S., as you know, well, teenage girls in the U.S., let's say, were wild about everything British. And this, these songs were, the accent was deliberately exaggerated to appeal to that audience. And I suppose the thinking was that it wouldn't appeal that much to the Brits. Mm. I don't know. But at any rate, they weren't released as singles there. But they were number one singles, both of them, in the U.S.
Mm. Well, let's go to Neville from Long Island. Hi, Neville. You're on the air.
Hello, Leonard and Patricia. I've been trying to get on the show for years. By the way, Patricia, you're absolutely correct.
In what way, Neville?
Sorry.
I mean, to get on just as a call-in, or do you want to be a guest?
To be a guest.
Oh, okay.
No. Sorry. Well, when I was in the music business, I was just going to say Peter Nunes from Manchester, but Mrs. Brown and the other one are actually take off of Cockney accents.
Oh,
He doesn't have that accent. He has an accent similar to mine, because he's from 20 miles from where I was born. And all English bands from Liverpool try to sound American. If you listen to the Beatles, early stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's because, I guess, the influence of, the American records, Chuck Berry and stuff like that.
Well, let me insert something here, though. The Beatles have said in interviews many times that they were not trying to sound American. On the contrary, they said that they started trying to sound American and it didn't work, it was unnatural, so they just sang in their natural singing voices. And as we all know, their natural singing voices turned out to be, unbeknownst to them, what we would perceive as sounding American.
But so many of their early recordings were of songs by Chuck Berry or the Isley Brothers.
Well, that's
or
true.
Songs
yeah.
from Motown.
Oh, right. They admired
Mr.
Buddy
Postman.
Holly. Oh, sure.
Yeah,
right.
If you listen, those early ones do sound very... I mean, my English... my American music friends over here say, no. And I'd say, yeah, listen, you know.
Hear little Britishisms when you're listening closely? Things that Americans might not pick up?
Yeah. I mean, I've called into the show 100 times and I just miss it by,
Well, you made it this time, Neville.
I know. I'll take over the show. No, I'm sorry.
Well, so when you sang. You say you were in the music business. Did you sing?
I was a road manager. I started off in Liverpool in 1962. I actually worked for the Beatles, but not as the Beatles. I worked at Apple later on.
Their record company.
I had a Liverpool accent, and now I have no accent.
Yeah, well, right. Well, when you go back to England, people say, Neville, you sound so American. And here Americans say, you sound so British.
I get it on the phone when I call my friends. They go, you're talking about elevators. The lift.
Well, see, that's vocabulary. That's not accent.
Just one more thing, Neville. Do you remember My Old Man Said Follow the Band?
I said Follow the Band and Don't Dilly Dally on the Way.
Of course, singing
it with you.
Thanks for calling.
All right. Thank you for the show.
Oh, I wanted to hear a duet there. I want to insert one other note here to keep in mind that a researcher in New Zealand did some academic work on this and wrote a paper that I read. It was very interesting. He did a study of singers in New Zealand. He had them speak a certain set of words. Then he had them sing the same set of words. And when he interviewed them, and he recorded them, when he interviewed them, they all said their perception was that they didn't hear a difference between what they were speaking and what they were singing. They did not hear a difference in their accents. But he says that, in fact, the sound quality, the vowels, the rhythms, the intonations all changed, and they lost their Kiwi accents.
But I've heard that when they sang one of Dean Martin's favorite hits, they sang, "That's a Maori."
Oh, that is the worst pun. I have to make a note of that.
The worst pun of the week.
I have to make a note of that.
Okay. We go now to Jim from Brook, New Jersey.
Hi,
Jim.
I would just say, as I was saying to the screener, to make a distinction, ABBA, you know, they're using ain't as acceptable, and for any European to affect American accent and song is acceptable. But for Americans to do it, I find it particularly problematic, and as I use the adjective to your screener, cheesy, that Dylan from Minnesota and Springsteen from New Jersey affecting a Southern accent, really, I just find cheesy.
Well, I think that that is...
And that's why they both have been such failures.
Right. I think what they're affecting is the folk rock sound. I don't know that they're... You know, I'll bet their perception is, again, that they are singing in their normal speaking voices. But it's the genre of music that
yeah, they come out of folk music.
Right. If you tried to say... if I had a hammer, in a perfect Philadelphia mainline accent, you would sound like a meatball. It just wouldn't.
That would be
fly.
Interesting to hear Katharine Hepburn sing.
But you see what I mean. There are certain songs that you just can't sing unless you use a certain kind of accent.
The senator from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
I know you touched on this topic for a second, but I think it's so important. I actually produce singers, and when they come to me, my job is to make them sound themselves. And I find all great singers are great mimics, and you really have to shake that, you know, mimicry and those traits out of a singer. So I think you really have to consider those. And also, it takes a certain amount of volume and compression to sing, especially pop music, and to put yourself up over the top of the music. Uh-huh. And when you sing with that compression, you lose accents. Myself, when I sing, people tell me, because I'm from Michigan, they say I have a Michigan accent. I know it's the words like here and milk, but they could only hear that if I whispered it. And so there's a big deal with volume. The only two famous people I know who sang with hardly any volume is Brian Ferry of Roxy Music and Roy Orbison. But I think they got to that point after singing loud and then compression. And I don't mean screaming. But anyway, I'd love to hear what you think about that and mimicking, how much mimicking can take over the mind of a singer.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think your point was that you can't really mimic and sing naturally. Am I getting what you meant? You have to drop the mimicry.
Most singers don't want to mimic, but if you ask a great singer, hey, can you sound like so-and-so? Or they always go, oh, I can sound just like...
Because singing and acting... Because singing and acting do have a lot in common.
Yes.
Right, but there's a leveling influence to the volume that you use and the air pressure and all that stuff. So I think you're right.
We thank you for your call, and we go now to Alice from Manhattan. Hi, Alice, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to mention that Guys and Dolls is a wonderful example
of
Americans using accents. And the lead woman sings a person.
Yes, Faith Prince.
A cough.
Oh, yeah, it would develop a cough. And when she says, it says here.
But that is actually in the lyric.
Yes, she had to do it. That was part
it was
of
written
the music.
That way.
It was written that way.
It wasn't written a person.
Poison.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, but still, you've got to be able to do it, you know.
True, but I think probably Frank Lesser had a character with an accent in mind when he wrote the music, you see? So it was easy to use that accent to sing those words. It wasn't difficult.
Now, we're running out of time, and there were some people who've called in with questions that have nothing to do with music. Mm-hmm. And here's one that seems to be of the moment because of the Olympics. Stephen from Highland Park, New Jersey.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, it's not on topic, though. What you just mentioned, that makes me think of My Fair Lady, where he rhymes rather and bother.
Right.
Uh-huh. But no, I have a beef. Meddle is not a verb.
Oh, to meddle.
Yes.
You know what? This came up at the last Olympics 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I got a lot of mail about this. People saying, what is this? They're using the verb meddle. to medal in some sport.
Yeah.
Actually, it's a pretty old usage.
Is it?
But the thing is, it gets attention because we only hear it every 4 years.
I looked it up. I mean, I posted this complaint on my Facebook page, and someone said, well, actually it is, but the only source I could see was for 73, which means it came from the usage of other broadcasters when they were broadcasting that.
You're being rather meddlesome right now.
Yes. I don't know. And I have another friend who says you can verb anything in English, but I disagree.
But I think that what we have to do is understand that there are some things that we just can't stop. There are certain movements we can't stop as much as we would like.
Well, but we can resist.
Well, you can personally resist. You can still use few instead of less when it's appropriate.
Right.
You don't have to use some of the more common new slang words, but... If other people do, just understand that that's the way language develops. And a reminder that if you want to ask Pat a question, you can email her directly at mailbox@grammophobia.com. You can also click on Pat's blog at grammophobia.com to see a selection of language questions from WNYC listeners. And Pat, you get a lot after the show.
Yes.
I would request
I'm sure I'll get a lot of objections after this one.
And I want to remind you also that Pat will be back on our show on September 19th. That's not that far off.
No.
And we will probably pursue some of the topics we discussed today and move on. Thank you so much again, Pat.
My pleasure.